This is KCBX, Central Coast Public Radio, here on NPR One.
This is the first in a multi-part series where we'll meet the people and places that make Nashville's Big Backyard a heartwarming journey of discovery. Nashville's Big Backyard, an economic and tourism initiative, encompasses a natural watershed that winds through the Natchez Trace National Parkway, featuring 12 rural communities. Leaper's Fork is the northern anchor, not too far from Nashville. The Big Backyard journey traverses Tennessee's southwest quarter, down into Alabama's legendary Shoals region, the mothership of American music. The featured rural community's common thread is the historic architecture and charming small-town atmosphere, some with a river running through it. I'm your host, Tom Wilmer. Come along and join me for an exploration of Nashville's Big Backyard with Aubrey Preston, the visionary behind the program. Preston, a resident of Leaper's Fork, realized that there are upside economic and cultural opportunities in the midst of the COVID-19 epidemic for refugees from urban centers across America who are seeking a rural alternative to urban life. Next up is a visit with Mike Wolf, host of History Channel's American Pickers TV series, at his home in Leaper's Fork. Wolf takes us on a journey across America and close to home, providing a contextual lens for Nashville's Big Backyard's various initiatives. We'll then visit with Liz McLaurin, president of the Land Trust for Tennessee in West Nashville. The Land Trust is a greater good engine of engagement for those who want to become involved with Nashville's Big Backyard's Land Trust Preservation Initiatives.
Hey, I'm Aubrey Preston. We're in Leaper's Fork, Tennessee, and we're talking about a project called NashvillesBigBackyard.org.
What is Nashville's Big Backyard, the breadth of it?
It is a project that came together as a result of the shutdown of all of our communities and the tourism economy in a region that makes up the southwest quadrant outside Nashville, Tennessee. Within this region, you have Nashville on one end and Muscle Shoals, Alabama on the other end, two global music icons. And in between that, you have the Natchez Trace Parkway, which commemorates the ancient Natchez Trace energy field that some say is America's oldest road. We came together, basically got on the phone early in April, knowing that we were probably facing a long downturn. I remember an old mentor of mine that said, you work hard during the bad times to get ready for the good times. You know, at my age, I've seen five or six of these recessions, and first couple I kind of sat through and waited, and I've learned that when times get bad, get busy, use that time to work on something, make something. In this situation, we just started seeing the winds that because of the COVID crisis, people were disproportionately moving out of the city and trying to find places in the country. And so we made a community project out of that we feel like will open up opportunity for some communities that have been losing population for the past few decades.
This is showcasing rural communities that are really awesome and cool, but most people don't know about. Never been there, not on the main drag.
Right, absolutely. So it's 8 counties, including Davidson County, where Nashville's at, and then 2 counties on the Alabama side, right at the Tennessee River. Since the 1920s, I believe the United States has had a net out-migration out of rural areas into urban areas, and I believe that changed in the 1990s for the first time. There became a net migration. It was a trickle back to the rural areas, and that's been picking up a little bit. And I believe that has mainly been driven by the idea that it's hard to make a living in these rural areas. They may be beautiful. They may have these incredible watersheds like we have. They may have historical, cultural, iconic things, like we have the place where Meriwether Lewis died in the early 1800s. We have the elephant sanctuary. We have just incredible places to fish and hunt, but it's hard to make a living in these areas. So one of the game changers of this is our area has been targeted as being one of the first rural areas of the country to actually not just get cable or internet, we're actually getting fiber optic to some of the least populated areas of Tennessee that have all these recreation values. So we think that's going to be a real game changer.
Especially as our world is changing and people are moving from cities to rural communities. There can be faster connection in tiny little town today than in a major city. I know there's Rugby, Tennessee, and like same sort of thing. It's faster than Knoxville, their internet, in this tiny little village.
Absolutely. Yeah. Some of these little towns, I tell people, sometimes these towns that have had tough economic times, it's a little bit like the NFL draft, is you either want to win the Super Bowl or you want to be dead last, because if you're dead last, you get the first draft pick. And some of these communities have gotten together and been successful, and because they are the most needy, have been able to be first in line with getting fiber. But people from the outside that are looking for places like this don't know of these places. So that's why we created the website, nashvillesbigbackyard.org. We took 12 little communities plus the Shoals area. On one website, it's like walking into an antique mall. You can go and learn about these communities on this website, and then you can have an opportunity to engage directly with them to find out information.
We've been on the road exploring these destinations, and what an epiphanous, eye-opening journey it's been for me. On the one level, it's the awesome historic architecture, right in the downtown heart of these towns, that has an incredible, affordable, beyond belief price point to buy a downtown commercial building, and to say nothing of a cool 1900 home.
It's fantastic. Take, for instance, at the top of our area where we're sitting here in Leaper's Fork, we're in Williamson County, Tennessee. A lot of people may know Franklin, Tennessee, directly south of Nashville. It is an area that is one of the highest per capita incomes in the nation, adjusted for cost of living. Of course, here in Leaper's Fork, we're a place where the biggest entertainers out of Nashville end up having their farms out here. It's kind of Aspen collides with Mayberry kind of thing. So home values and commercial building values are very high here. But you go down the trace a couple of counties, and we're two or three counties from the lowest per capita income in the state. Little Perry County, it has 8,000 people. The only knock it's got on it, it's always been hard to make a living. Fiber optic changes all of that, and of course, with the winds of cultural change that COVID has brought on, we believe there's a tremendous opportunity to bring some jobs back to those areas, and we believe that it's a tremendous opportunity for people who have the opportunity to do remote work to go buy that downtown building.
And one more, across the street in town after town, they're riverfront. How cool is that?
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's just the fishing is just fantastic for people that like that. The scenery, just the authentic, untouched culture. And so we've built this project to hopefully not attract masses of people that will go and change those places, but we're a place that has a lot of creators, and of course creators can work well remotely. This is the area that really put the country in country music. You know, people go to Nashville for country music, but country music is actually from the countryside where we're at. Entertainers that became known at the Grand Ole Opry, like Hank Williams or Dee Ford Bailey or Minnie Pearl, this was where they lived. Hank Williams had his country place out here. So there's a big heritage of creating out here. You know, we think it's a great opportunity for the communities and a great opportunity for people looking for an affordable place that's rich in history and authenticity.
One of the pleasant surprises for me when I first learned about Nashville's Big Backyard is that it goes across the border. It includes parts of Alabama, specifically the Shoals region. And one of the most pleasant surprises and eye-opening moments for me was the Shoals recording studio. Tell us about that area.
There's four little towns that make up the Shoals area: Florence, Tuscumbia, Sheffield, and Muscle Shoals. And the area has what appears to almost be a supernatural musical force coming out of that area. It is the place where W.C. Handy, the father of the blues, grew up before he moved to Memphis and became famous for that. It's the place where Sam Phillips, father of rock and roll, Sun Records, Elvis Presley, Johnny Cash, Roy Orbison, Carl Perkins, all of those acts, real big thinking innovator came out of there. Rick Hall started the Muscle Shoals sound in around 1960, and Muscle Shoals and probably Stax and American Studios in Memphis, that's the primary places where soul music came out of.
What's really funny in my epiphanous moment is how important a role the Muscle Shoals studio played, that I kind of defaulted and thought, well, that must have been in Nashville where they recorded that.
Right. Rick Hall, who started that, actually, he got his inspiration from Nashville. He actually got the blueprints from RCA Studio B and went down there and was determined to do something great from Muscle Shoals. He had the idea of taking young African-American people who he met who were just great singers and basically singing country songs, and that kind of became what we know as soul. And so his first hit that gave him the seed money to build Fame Recording Studios was Arthur Alexander singing You Better Move On. And so he got a hit on that, and this was about the same time, about 1964, that the Stones and the Beatles were just really kind of learning to write songs. And the Beatles covered Arthur Alexander, I believe the song Anna, and then the Stones covered You Better Move On. Here you have this guy, Rick Hall. His first hit gets covered by the Beatles and the Stones out of Muscle Shoals, Alabama. Of course, that was just the beginning. He built the studio. It's credited with the real big explosion of Aretha Franklin finding her voice there.
Again, missed that, man. I would have thought Motown. Today, we just got back from Muscle Shoals studio. It's still open and working, and it's open for tours. That's way cool.
It's just a matter of people don't know. It's about 2 hours south of Nashville. I suppose that they've just been busy doing and haven't bragged on themselves nearly enough for people to know. So music experts from all over the world go there. I think 40% of the people that come to the studio, something like that, are international. The experts know, but people domestically that just love music have no idea that, they could go to the place where Percy Sledge recorded When a Man Loves a Woman. The Stones recorded Wild Horses and Brown Sugar in 3-day period there, right before they went to Altamont. Old time rock and roll, Lynyrd Skynyrd started there. The birthplace of Southern rock, Duane Allman, that's where they first got to record. So many more songs you wouldn't think of. Paul Simon recorded Kodachrome there, and so many songs that people would expect. They came from New York or L.A. or maybe Nashville. Mm-hmm. No, it's Muscle Shoals.
And it's still going on.
Yeah, so they refer to it as the hit recording capital of the world. Both recording studios there, Fame and Muscle Shoals Sound, the first two big ones there, they still do recording, but they make allowance for people to make tours, to have tours for music lovers. It's a must. It's a little ways away from any of the big cities, so a lot of people don't notice it. But pound for pound, I'd put it up against any place in the world for culture.
And I think that's the beauty of it, is people can have a sense of discovery of something new and off the beaten track.
Sure.
Let's go back up closer to Nashville before we go, and a couple other towns.
The town of Hohenwald, named after the German town. The elephant sanctuary there that people can come. These are circus elephants that have been rescued. It's the place in North America where they do that. They've got, believe it or not, 14 or 1,500 acres or something like that out there. In the middle of this country place, there's elephants walking around, and they just do a fantastic job. You can go there, learn all about that. They have a worldwide audience that follows that. The little town of Linden is just a fantastic little 24-room hotel that a couple from Rhode Island came and fixed that little
and that's
hotel
the,
up.
The
Commodore Hotel, yeah. And, of course, you can go stay there. They've got wonderful food, and, they have music. And then that's right on the Buffalo River, which looks like a Colorado trout stream.
And they have
smallmouth bass.
Kayaks,
yeah. all of that thing, canoeing, and it's fantastic.
I think that's a really cool destination. That was one of my favorites.
Yeah.
And what a cute downtown.
Right. It's like a constellation of these little small towns that, you know, had a heyday probably back in the 40s and 50s. And when the 60s, when the interstates came, these towns got bypassed, and they've been kind of fighting for their life ever since then. But in the 90s, along the Natchez Trace, when the Natchez Trace Parkway was finished through here, the National Parkway, most of these little towns began to kind of pull them, bootstrap their way up, and began to build experiences around these little downtowns. And my wife and I, that's what we like to do. We like to go from historic little downtown to downtown. And this is this constellation of these cool little towns that each one of them has something neat. They all are kind of tied together with music as a way of life. And then again, the icon of Nashville Music City and Muscle Shoals, roughly 100 miles away, and these little towns in between, makes a fantastic experience.
That's so cool. Okay, to learn more, where would you direct somebody?
Nashvillesbigbackyard.org has a really user-friendly website. Our social media, our Facebook, our Instagram, we put a lot of effort into that to do what I kind of call National Geographic level of put a really good picture up there and a really good appetizer of different things that are within the big backyard, so people can kind of take a little bit of a virtual tour by looking at our social media or going to our website. My name is Aubrey Preston. I'm here in Leaper's Fork. Please visit us at nashvillesbigbackyard.org.
Aubrey, thank you so much. Come along and join me for a fascinating conversation with Mike Wolf, the star of American Pickers, at his home in Leaper's Fork, Tennessee.
Study about that little girl, couldn't keep from crying. Honey, babe, I'm bound to ride.
We're here with Mike Wolf to talk about Nashville's big backyard and music. And this really is the mothership of music of America.
Yeah, we're right in the cradle of it right now, exactly.
So you were born and raised in LeClaire, Iowa.
I'm an Iowa boy. I'm what they call a Southerner by choice, okay? Not by birth, and there's a lot of us now down here.
But something brought you down here.
Yeah.
What was it?
The music. Really, it totally was the music. You know, I used to pass through here on my motorcycle all the time on my way to North Carolina into the mountains to ride, and I would always stop off in Nashville and hit Robert's Western World, which was an extremely authentic experience if you are a country fan. When you walk in there, I mean, the whole place just kind of embodies what country music is all about. And you can tell it's been that way forever. And then you stroll a couple doors down and you're at Tootsie's, you know, and then you're in awe. So I started coming down here on my motorcycle years ago. And I was always a big country music fan because, you know, I love the storytelling. When I grew up, my freshman year was 79 and I graduated in 82. Which were great years for music because there was so much of it coming out anyway, from new wave to punk to big hair bands to the older classic rock and roll was still out. I mean, there was a lot going on musically, and I just overloaded myself. Remember back in the day when you were recording a King Biscuit Flower Hour? You remember that?
I do.
I used to wear those TDKs out, man. And anyway, then I finally found country music. I was probably 29. You know, I started listening to Cash and Hank and all that stuff. And then I dove deeper into the roots of it and then started connecting the dots with Nashville and this area and fell in love with it, obviously, before I even got here. Because I think I'm like a lot of people. Once you get here, it doesn't fall short. It doesn't let you down. And you feel like you've been here a bunch of times because you've traveled here in your mind so many times, you know.
Nashville being the mothership can consume you for life.
Yeah.
You know, I became friends with Zach Brown's bass player.
Nice.
Spent a day in the studio. I mean, Studio B. I mean, you could go on and on.
It's gorgeous.
Yeah, the Ryman. I mean, you could just suck it up forever.
Yeah, I'm always a romantic. I mean, I like to be around places, any place that has a lot of history. Like, you know, where I'm from in Iowa, I would spend a lot of my younger days. And, you know, even now when I go back, I go to Galena, Illinois. You know, that town is very historic and it really resonates with me. And then, you know, I've been finding my place in Natchez, Mississippi lately too, with the history. So I'm just kind of a moth to the flame when it comes to any place that really has a story that still feels authentic. You know, that's the big thing, is the authenticity. Yeah. That's hard to find anymore.
And as you know, I've been to Tennessee and every quarter of it. One thing I missed, and nobody ever told me about in Franklin or Nashville, was Muscle Shoals Studio.
Yeah, oh my God, yeah, dude. It's like an hour and a half down the road.
Tell us about that.
What it means to me. I mean, obviously Muscle Shoals, you know, I was introduced to it by, you know, friends of mine that are in the recording industry, they're artists, and they were talking about it at first. And then, you know, Aubrey Preston, who I work with on Nashville's Big Backyard, he's constantly telling me the history of it. And then if you Google it, your mind is blown by all the bands that, you know, made the pilgrimage there to record because of the session players, the people that were here that they would record with.
The Swampers.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And some of those guys are still around in that area. That area still feels authentic to me when you get into Muscle Shoals.
But talk about being under the radar, man.
Oh.
How many people, myself included, missed it until now?
Yeah, I think that, you know, the documentary has really pushed a lot of people over that way. And that whole corridor obviously needs a boost, just like so many other places in America that do need a boost. I just got back from Texas and was in a lot of small towns there. And, you know, it's like any other rural community. There's a lot of empty storefronts and, you know, everybody's excited about trying to figure out a way to bring people to the community.
Where were you in Texas?
Oh, man, I spent a lot of time in Fort Worth, and then we went out to 2 hours out each way, you know, every day.
Was it a music trip?
No, no, we were filming the show. We stopped filming the show for about 4 months, and then we figured out a way to film the show when we're on the road. So we're tested every couple of days, and the people that we film with are tested, and, you know, we're pretty strict about it. You know, you stay in some of these hotels. Like, I just got back from the airport in Nashville today. I flew out of Dallas this morning. I mean, there's just nobody there. There's not, which is nice, but it's also scary in a lot of ways because, you know, I think we throw around that term, the new normal, you know, and everybody's waiting for the shoe to drop in regards to, like, is this something that can happen again? So it's inspired a lot of people, I think, creatively to think about what their life is, what their art is, what they want their lifestyle to be. Mm-hmm. And that's what I think, you know, was birthed with Aubrey with the Nashville Big Backyard Project.
So let's dig a little deeper on that whole project. What does that mean to you? What do you think is exceptional about the whole concept?
Well, Aubrey and I have always agreed about small towns and how important they are. You know, I mean, there's some 60 million Americans that live in rural areas. You know, for the type of work I'm in, I've been traveling in and out of these small towns most of my life, you know, really, really a lot for the last 30 years. And I've seen the struggles that a lot of these smaller towns have economically, culturally, now it's generationally. But when you get into these towns, you look at the architecture, you look at the main streets. You know, to me, initially having experiences with people that were in some of these smaller communities, I was just taken back by their passion and their drive to stay when a lot of people left. You know,
don't you think that an upside of our whole COVID world is, you know, people are remote working now. So a Silicon Valley dude does not, he can live anywhere.
Absolutely.
And it's happening right now, isn't it?
Yes.
People are hunting out these rural areas.
Yeah, I've kind of always lived that way because with me, I never made money locally where I lived. I lived in LeClaire, Iowa, but in order for me to make money and what I was doing, I would travel, mm-hmm. you know, so I would dip in and out of LeClaire. I lived there, but I was gone probably 2 weeks of the month. You know, now, like, for example, the company that makes my show, they had a huge office in New York. Well, they got rid of it. They don't need it anymore. So my executive producer is, he's in Florida, soon to move to Austin, Texas. The editors are all working from home.
So you're doing remote.
Absolutely. That I talked to the president of history the other day. He's in Oregon right now. He's been in Oregon for months.
So our world, our society is radically changing fast before our eyes.
Completely. But like I said, it is opening people's eyes in regards to like what type of lifestyle they want to have, whether it's them, you know, with their family or them by themselves, thinking about, you know, hey, maybe I want to open a small business. Maybe I want to grow food. Maybe I want to start a company that manufactures something. You know, I mean, there's all different levels of it. But for me, I think the most thing that we can really help people understand is the lifestyle. The lifestyle is completely different because everybody is taking a chance that's doing it in some ways. I mean, it's not like, you know, hey, I live in, you know, Detroit and I'm going to move to Austin, Texas. You know, that's not taking a chance. I'm talking about people that are in Chicago and they're moving to an area that's 3,000 people in the corridor that we're discussing, you know, right off of the trace. You know, that's taking a chance, and that's an alternative lifestyle in a way of like, wow, I really didn't know what I was missing. I didn't understand the importance of, you know, what's important to me until this whole COVID thing. It's everybody's reflecting.
And I've been following in your trails around America, a lot of the same places. And I know you feel the same thing I do. You go to these towns, you alluded to it earlier, and you look at this 1898 architecture, Nebraska or whatever, and the town's barely hanging on, but you can feel it. It is palpable, this rebirth.
Yes, absolutely. And but the thing is that that's enticing, and I've always told my friends this. You know, I was in Keokuk, Iowa about a year ago, and I was buying some stuff from a guy in a building, and he goes, you should buy this building. And I said, man, I go, it's a little too far away from me. I go, what do you want for the building? He goes, it's 180 grand. I go, wow, it's a beautiful building. And he goes, that's for the eight of them.
Oh, God.
He was trying to sell eight buildings for 180 grand. You know, and he couldn't get that much money out of it. And then I went up to Fort Madison, Iowa. There was one building downtown for 20 grand. There was one building downtown for 60 grand. There was another building that was free because the roof had caved in on it. I mean, people don't understand that, you know, you can really buy something inexpensively if you want that type of lifestyle. Now, for me, when I look at main streets and I look at what the government has tried to do for a lot of these small towns with tax incentives and all these things, hey, we want to bring corporate America into these rural areas and that'll change things. Well, the problem with that is that corporate America isn't going to go into the middle of Kansas or Nebraska because there's no amenities there for their white collar workers that are making 200 grand a year. You know, those guys don't want to live there. They want to live in, you know, Chattanooga, Tennessee, where there's the mountains and the water and all that stuff, you know, so
major nightlife.
Yeah. So to me, the new Main Street is going to be younger people that open a brick and mortar store if they want to, and they're going to have a huge online business. When I talk about huge online business, like for me, for example, before the show, when I was living in LeClaire, I sold everything online, whether it was through my website or auctioning things off on websites.
But you were ahead of the curve on that.
I kind of was a little bit ahead of the curve, only in the way that, like, I was branding myself in a way, I guess, that that people understood, like, when they bought something from me or when they came to see my space, they knew what they were going to see. There's been people in the antique industry that have specialized in things over the years, but they haven't placed them in a way and presented them in a way like with decor and, you know, creating a space that people walk into and they're like, oh, I want to own that because I like the way you have it, you know, or I want to own that guitar because I like the way you display it. You know, I mean, antique dealers as the industry overall, I think, fall short of, like, you know, understanding branding the business. You know, there's a couple in, I don't know if you know these gals in Texas, they're called the Junk Gypsies.
No.
They're really cool. They're down there by Round Top. And they were one of the first, like, junkers, I guess, that really branded themselves. We're the Junk Gypsies. And everything was very consistent with their marketing and their message and what they were putting out. And they were smart because they were able to sell merch. They weren't just selling antiques. They were selling merch because it said Junk Gypsies on it.
T-shirts.
Yeah, people wanted to be part of their tribe, you know, and they were doing that, oh my gosh, almost 30 years ago. So now a lot of these younger people that are selling stuff on Etsy and selling stuff on Facebook Marketplace or eBay or whatever they're doing that are out picking, they're branding themselves in a way that it's more about decor. It's not so much about antiquities, and they can make a living anywhere. So if you want to live in a, you know, turn of the century building in a loft apartment that's 2,000 square feet, and then you've got 2,000 square feet below for retail, and you can buy that for $80,000 and throw 200 grand in, all of a sudden, it's almost like you're living a dream. You're like, is this even possible for me to be living this way? Mm-hmm. It truly is. And that's what Nashville Big Backyard is about. It's about helping people understand that these places exist, that these opportunities exist. And now with being able to work remote, you know, why do you have to be in Austin, Atlanta, LA, San Francisco, Chicago? You know, why do you have to be those places? You can be anywhere you want to be.
And here's another one, see if you share my perception. I fly into O'Hare or Milwaukee, and we get in the car, and in 20 minutes, we're in rural America. So there are a lot of these small towns that are viable for somebody that needs to access a major airport. Do you sense what I'm talking about?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's why Leaper's Fork, where we're at right now, was always very successful because it was rural, but you're 40 minutes from the airport, you know, 45 minutes from the airport. Yeah. So this was always a place where people can come out here from the city of Nashville, drive 30 minutes out, and you could buy 300 acres. I mean, obviously, a lot of that stuff has been bought up. And the zoning was also conducive to this stuff, too. Like, you had to have 5 acres to even build a house, you know, things like that. I remember when I was on city council in Iowa, you know, it was a very rural community. There was a lot of farmers, and a lot of the farmers were trying to get their land annexed into the city so developers could buy their properties and put 200 homes up. Well, I mean, if that was the case, if they were able to do that, everybody would have done it. So I remember in certain areas outside of our community, there had to be a house standing in order for you to build a house. There had to be a house standing. And you couldn't buy a ton of acreage because the state and the county wouldn't allow it because, you know, I mean, there's ethanol use for crop now, there's human use, there's, you know, animals. I mean, so it's like the state of Iowa, like a lot of those rural communities, you know, the land can't just be transferred to people to build homes and do what they want with it. Mm-hmm. You know, so it really depends on where you're at.
Let's loop back to small town America and you being on the ground in their barns and whatnot, talking to these people one-on-one. What was the most epiphanous moments, you know, where you learn from these people, how they're reinventing their world and surviving and thriving?
Well, I mean, for me, being in the antique trade the way I was, I would always go in and out of small towns. There would be dealers that were dealing out of a barn or something, you know. I mean, really, my eyes were open to what was possible in a community when I started on city council in LeClaire, Iowa. That's a town of about 3,500 people. And I was on the fire department, and I was on city council, and I was on the tourism board. I really threw myself into the community because there was so much electricity in the air for our, like, basically 4-block corridor that we had that was retail and mixed use. But it needed a tremendous amount of work. It was at a transition point where a lot of people hadn't fixed up the buildings. A lot of the storefronts had closed down. And, you know, we were pretty close to a major metropolitan area, but, you know, it was really hurting. It really was. So there were some younger people that opened a restaurant, and then there were some people that opened some retail. And then those two things, I saw how that changed our downtown as far as like changed it conversationally. The conversation was different. Like, oh, did you see the Faithful Pilot just open up? That's a great restaurant. Oh my gosh, you see Grasshopper's Boutique just opened up. And then all of a sudden, those two entrepreneurs really changed it. When I was on council, one of the reasons I ran is to do the streetscape. You know, we got to the point where we realized, you know, the only trade that we were ever going to have was heritage tourism. You know, we didn't have any industry. We had no light industry really to speak of. Heritage tourism was what we needed to really hang our hat on. And so when we did the streetscape, it really opened up the avenues for more people to come in and buy property and restore it or buy property and open a business.
You say streetscape, is that making it more pedestrian friendly?
Yeah, we widened the sidewalks. We put trees down through the lane. We buried all the power lines. We did the antique street lights. We did curb bump outs, you know, where it felt more walkable. And, you know, we're on Highway 67, you know, so we're right along the Mississippi River there. So that corridor is what, you know, is like we have bald eagles in the winter and we have pelicans in the summer and we have the what we call the leaf peepers, you know, and the leaves turn. We got the leaf peepers coming to town. And so, you know, there was some industry, but Buffalo Bill, he was from there. His house that's in Cody, Wyoming, right, was from our town. A guy cut it in half, threw it on a train car, and hauled it out to Cody, Wyoming. So all that's left in our town is a little empty field and a sign that has a picture of that house. We did have the bones. I think every community has the bones. It's just like getting the right people to, it could be just one or two, and they're excited.
Well, you're saying going forward, the key to success is getting somebody, getting a core little incubator people. We were just in two rural towns today where it literally was one couple that bought and restored a hotel downtown that had been abandoned and closed for 16 years. And like you said, they, what was it? That's the one where there were 14?
The Commodore. Yeah. 14
empty.
Yeah, I've been to that place. Yeah. I've been to that town.
You know, it's turning around.
Now, all those 14 buildings are still...
That's awesome. I met a guy in that town when I was walking around down there. He bought a house 4 years ago. It had 5 acres. He had a 3-bedroom house. He had a shop. He had a barn. He paid $35,000 for it. And his property taxes were $80 a year.
Oh, my God.
That stuff is still out there. Yeah. It really, truly is. So if you've got a great internet connection, I mean, you could literally be anywhere that you want to be.
Well, we were down in Muscle Shoals.
Yeah.
They're getting high-end internet.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's a huge draw. And out here, we're just kind of getting into that ourselves, to be totally honest with you. I mean, we do have a decent internet connection, but if you're going to run a business, I mean, a substantial business, you want a little bit more than that. I can remember being in the Delta about probably 4 years ago, and we were picking this building downtown. There was an older gentleman there. He had been the mayor of this town for 25 years. His wife was the president of the bank for 50 years. They were very, very invested in this community. And there was no storefront left other than his and the bank.
This is
down in Mississippi. And he was telling me about how when the school closed and the kids started having to go 25 miles one way to go to school, that's when things really changed, you know, for their community. And he said something to me that I'll never forget. He goes, you know, a lot of people outlive their friends, you know. He goes, imagine outliving your town. He goes, I've outlived this town. This town will never come back. And he goes, there used to be so many people on the sidewalk down here on the weekends. You couldn't even walk on the sidewalk. You know, there was industry here. People had pride. And, you know, he was very descriptive in regards to the way this community used to look. And so about halfway through the day, people knew we were filming there. And he looked out the window because there were so many people coming to the front of the store to see, you know, what was going on. And he looked out the window and he started crying and he goes, look, there's people in my town again. And when he said that to me, everything that I had saw for the last 25 years, he put a narrative to it. You know, he made it real in a way that I had never heard before. And so,
you could see it.
Yeah, I could physically see it. And so when Aubrey asked me to get involved with Nashville's Big Backyard, I thought, you know, this is perfect, especially with right now, it's perfect timing. And basically what we're doing is we're pushing people through a corridor of towns that are 5,000 or less. And we're saying, hey, you know, there's some amenities in these towns. There's opportunities in these towns. You know, there's obviously a different lifestyle. And if you're willing to take a chance right now and go into the great unknown and understand what's available there for you, you can have an incredible life. And Aubrey and I have talked about it. You know, hey, even if we push 20 people into that corridor, then it becomes generational for them. That's a huge thing. You know, that's a huge thing. That's like moving the needle big time for the community and for family. Because, you know, in these towns, the first thing that happens when a lot of these factories go overseas is they lose their sense of pride. Once they lose their pride, then, you know, it's alcoholism, it's drug abuse, it's teenage pregnancy, you know, all of these things. It's like the snowball effect, and then it becomes generational. So now that's the sad thing is, like, everything that we're talking about is now generational. Here's one thing I tell people all the time. I tell people if they want to see Main Street America, if they want to see some of these rural towns, have this experience, they got to get out and do it now. Because you know what? It's disappearing rapidly.
But on the other hand, it might be the forefront of a renaissance.
Yes, that's what's happening now. That's what's happening now with everybody like going, I got to get the hell out of LA. I got to get the hell out of New York. That's happening right now. But when, you know, I'm just going to go there. I'm going to get political for a second. You know, when I was traveling around and when Trump was running, you know, I knew he was going to win. I knew he was going to win. Every town I went to, I was Cleveland. Oh, they were just like, you know what? We're going to vote for Trump because he says, screw the Chinese. You know, he's a guy that's first, he's standing on a podium in a suit and he's saying, screw the Chinese, you know, and no one had ever said that to those people before. No one had ever said that to anybody in America before. And then everybody was standing there going, how the hell did this guy win? So it shows you where we are as a country, the way we feel about ourselves now and the way we want to feel about ourselves. You know, what do we need to change that? I mean, we were so desperate and so wanting and yearning for someone to embrace rural America that it finally happened and he was president. Now, you know, I think with the COVID thing, in some way, I mean, I always try to look at like, what can we learn from this? It's like, it's a blessing for what we're talking about right now with rural America. Yeah, because people, they're getting out of Dodge, man. I mean, I did years ago, and I never looked back. Now I see people downtown Columbia, Tennessee, and Centerville, you know, and they come up to me, you know, they're like, hey, we've been here a couple months, and we absolutely love it. Our children love it. We feel safe here. You know, this is the way I grew up, you know, getting back to the roots of like the way they grew up, you know, having their children experience the same exact thing is a huge thing.
Amazing moment in American history.
Yes.
And we're living it.
Yes.
And that's the thing with time. When you're in the midst of it, it's like you can't see it happening day by day, but collectively it's like so obvious.
Yeah. Aubrey is an incredible individual. You know, when he put together the Americana Music Triangle, and then now he's basically doing the same thing with connecting the dots with the Nashville Big Backyard. You know, it's thankless, you know, but he just keeps pushing through because he understands the importance of it. And when I met him and we started talking, I was blown away by him. I was like, God, I feel like I'm talking to myself a little bit here. Because, you know, there's a lot of people that care, you know, and there's a lot of people that would like to do something, and there's a lot of people that do things, but you know, on the level that he can is extraordinary.
He's a magician.
Yeah. I feel blessed to know him. Oh man. Thank you for being here. I had a good time talking about it. Obviously I'm passionate about it. I look forward to the next conversation.
You got it. I'm Tom Wilmer reporting from Tennessee, where we've been speaking with Mike Wolf.
This land is your land, and this land is my land, from the California to the New York.
I'm Liz McLaurin. I'm president and CEO of the Land Trust for Tennessee, and we are at Glen Levin Farm, a 64-acre farm in Nashville, Tennessee, right in the middle of town.
Pretty much an anomaly, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It is. Nothing like it.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about your primary mission and what your focus is.
We are a statewide land trust, which is somewhat unusual, and Tennessee is a very long state and three grand divisions that are very distinctive culturally and from a topographic way. It's all about land forms. So we are all over the state. We protect land, public and private, for future generations. And our bread and butter is called the conservation easement. Any kind of easement you might think of could be a road easement, an access easement, but this is a conservation easement. And what it does is it protects private land generally. We work with private landowners to protect land, and it just limits development. It doesn't mean you can't farm it, doesn't mean you can't build a barn, doesn't even mean you can't build another house or two, depending on the size of the property. But it protects it in perpetuity. So, you know, we're in Tennessee. We say our little tagline is perpetuity, y'all.
But how about somebody inheritance, you know, when they die, you know, having it go over to the land trust?
It's a great question. We do take bequests of land. In fact, we're sitting here on one of those. It was given to us in 2006 through a will. But typically, people sell the land. You can still sell it. You can pass it down to heirs. And you can give it to us. What we do is we ask that people let us know about it to make sure that we can accept the terms of that gift.
So again, if somebody enters into that agreement, it's in perpetuity. So when you sell the property, it's encumbered with that caveat.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. Well said. That's right. Mm-hmm. Yes. And we actually defend our easements to the point, hopefully we can resolve them out of court. But, you know, we from time to time, we have legal challenges.
Talk to us about Leaper's Fork, for example, and how that was a game changer.
Well, Leaper's Fork was a game changer because, you know, the Land Trust for Tennessee had just gotten started. And you got this guy out there, Aubrey Preston, who's buying up land and getting friends to do the same with the idea of preservation. And so we were just starting, and Aubrey said, I'm in. And he led the way, and people follow him and have followed him. And it's become this place that people are drawn to. I mean, especially during this coronavirus period, it's been incredible how many people have come out and moved out there. But it's really our furniture showroom. And, you know, it's incredible what the vision of one person can inspire other people to have their own conservation vision. Mm-hmm. And really, Leaper's Fork is our furniture showroom in a rural way. And it inspires other places across the state to follow suit.
So it's been growing and working, and that momentum continues.
Absolutely. And we just protected another property in Leaper's Fork a couple weeks ago. We signed the conservation easement on a beautiful place. Mm-hmm. So it's across the state, but the dominoes keep falling in Leaper's Fork. Mm-hmm.
So taking the Leaper's Fork model forward, how does that benefit and work going downstate, the rural communities?
Right. You know, from Nashville all the way to the Alabama line and that Nashville's big backyard area that is such a rich, important area. You know, if you think about the Natchez Trace, it's that seam that goes through. And, you know, culturally, it's extraordinary. It's a diverse, you know, ethnically diverse, economically diverse corridor. And we do work, we have done a lot of work all up and down the trace, protecting that view shed. If you can imagine seeing things off the views that you don't want to see, that destroys that national park.
Give us a couple specific examples that you're most proud of.
Yes. So if you're on the Natchez Trace Parkway and you go to the Water Valley Overlook, I don't know if you all visited Water Valley, but it is one of my favorite little tiny communities. But that view from that overlook that's just panoramic, beautiful, is protected because we protected the land.
Was that
below.
Under threat? Or was it more looking forward in the future?
It's looking forward. Yeah. You know, I think there wasn't going to be a Walmart down there, but, but you know, it's important to protect that. And we have some real visionary landowners who jumped on and did that with us. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and along that Natchez Trace Parkway, you know, we just talked about Water Valley, but a lot of those view sheds are not protected. And this Nashville's Big Backyard movement has really ignited interest in that area. And so what would be terrific is if we had people who had an interest in a place like Leaper's Fork. Maybe they couldn't land in Leaper's Fork, but they can look further out and they can buy a piece of land and work with us to protect that land, because those are the kind of people we would love to have coming to Nashville's Big Backyard. This is a real movement. It's extraordinary, and we're so happy we might be able to be a part of it.
That's awesome. Okay, your turn. Anything you want to add, you're most proud of?
Well, this year has been a challenging year in lots of ways, but our team at the Land Trust for Tennessee really has knocked it out of the park this year. And in fact, we were recognized for that, knocking it out of the park for 21 years, actually, this year by the Land Trust Alliance, which is our education advocacy sort of umbrella organization. Every year they give out one of these awards, and it's the National Land Trust Excellence Award. We sort of pinch ourselves about it, but we actually won that award. So that's a huge accomplishment, kind of the cherry on top of 21 years of conservation.
Good feeling, huh?
Oh, it's extraordinary. Yeah. Extraordinary feeling.
Yeah, unsung heroes, typically.
Right. We're sort of people who, you know, are hidden in plain sight. Mm-hmm. So this was a nice way to come out of hiding.
Liz, thanks for sharing.
Well, thank you.
Okay, Liz, if somebody wanted to learn more about your world, where would you direct them?
I would direct them to landtrusttn.org. That's landtrusttn.org. That has all of our information, great educational videos, and our phone number and all of our contact of our for our terrific staff. So that's where I would go. And my name is Liz McLaurin, President and CEO of the Land Trust for Tennessee.
Awesome. Thanks again, Liz.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Wilmer, reporting from Nashville, Tennessee. We'll see you there.
My name is Roseanne Cash. I listen to WNYC in New York. In fact, NPR is all I listen to. And if I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. Funding for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Hawaiian Legacy Reforestation Initiative.
Hawaiian Legacy Hardwoods and Four Seasons Resort invite you to sponsor a legacy tree and contribute to the biodiversity of Hawaii. Legacy trees can honor an individual, commemorate an event, or memorialize a loved one. Every tree dedication is a living legacy and a gift which grows grander year after year. The best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. The second best time is now.
I'll be turning 33 next Friday morning. Friday morning 15 years ago, my grandfather called me to his bedside, and he told me there was something I should know. He said, don't stray too far from the land, boy. The land will one day set you free. When the cities all are dying, the folks up there crying, the land will save you, wait and see. So I loaded up my car and moved to Denver to work a job and chase big city dreams. But I never found the life I really wanted till I came back home to Leaper's Fork, Tennessee. He said, don't stray too far from the land, boy. The land will one day set you free. When the cities all are dying, the folks up there crying, the land will save you, wait and see. It didn't hit me quite as hard then as those words come through today. But in the chaos all around me, I can still hear Grandpa say, don't stray too far from the land, boy. The land will one day set you free. When the cities all are dying, the folks up there crying, the land will save you, wait and see.